Anybody get a shot up at the buzzer? It's good! Brooks Hall!
The place
hits it at the buzzer! The Dayton Flyers!
Pandemonium in the Dayton Decibel Dungeon!
Sanford cracks all the way up.
This is one of the great college basketball venues in the nation, UD Arena.
And welcome back to Talking Out Loud, the victorious return to the podcast for me, for your victorious Dayton Flyers. They get the big road win, 77-71 over Marquette in overtime in Milwaukee at the Pfizer Forum, or whatever the Milwaukee Bucks are calling their home arena nowadays. Dayton gets the big overtime win last night, as I mentioned, 77-71. Coming up on the program today, we're going to have Mo Egger from ESPN Radio, a Dayton graduate and UC pregame host and postgame host and broadcast engineer. He's been doing that. We get into that a little bit during the interview. So Mo's going to join me on the back half of this pod, but I wanted to discuss Dayton's win over Marquette last night, as well as kind of touch on where things are for the Flyers 5 games into the season. They're 4-1. With their one loss being to Cincinnati. So Dayton turns the ball over 25 times last night and win the basketball game, which is pretty, pretty impressive. In a lot of different factors there. The fact that Dayton turned the ball over 25 times and won the basketball game is pretty remarkable. And, you know, just 8-9 days ago at the time of taping this pod, UC turned the ball over 24 times and won the game. So you know, maybe that's just the key to winning college basketball games now. Maybe you just turn it over 20 plus times, just be really efficient when you don't, and you'll end up winning the basketball game. So there you go. So Dayton gets the win last night. Shane Montgomery was awesome. He was awesome. His best game in a Flyer uniform by far. He finishes 8 of 11 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3, 18 points. Had 3 steals, grabbed 3 boards. I thought DeShane Montgomery was the best player on the floor last night. Mo says the same in our interview. So, he played great. Keyonte Jones was MIA for the first half, got into a lot of early foul trouble. But, man, was he great down the stretch, especially in overtime. He makes the three, and he makes one of the best defensive plays I've ever seen a Dayton player make with his block with about 50 seconds to go in overtime with the Flyers up by 3, 74-71. And just kind of off of an offensive rebound, comes from about the Big East logo, which is about a step inside of the free throw line, to come and swat the ball away before it hits the backboard, before it hits the rim, goes to Javon Bennett. Marquette fouls for some reason. And Javon Bennett goes to the line, makes both. Dayton gets another stop, and they ice the game away for the 77-71 victory. It's a funny thing to say, and I saw this on Twitter. It's kind of a wild thing to say, but outside of turning the ball over 25 times, I thought Dayton played really, really well. They shot 53% from the field. They were 7 of 17 from 3 for 41%. A lot more selective with their three-point shots last night. Made a couple. Jacob Connor, 2 big 3s. We'll talk about him in a minute. Dayton gets to the line 26 times. Not as much down the stretch as I would have liked, but we'll get into that as well. But yeah, I was pretty impressed with how Dayton played last night. And for a team that's still trying to figure themselves out and still trying to figure out what this is all going to look like, I thought that they did a tremendous job of taking the fight to Marquette. And really, outside of a 5-minute stretch in the first half, and the last 5 minutes where Dayton's offense just kind of stalled into nothing, and you know, barely got the ball inside of the 3-point line. And so Marquette was just sitting in a zone. Dayton wasn't really moving the ball around that zone. So yeah, outside of those moments, Dayton pretty much dominated the basketball game. You know, they led 17-9 at the under 12 of the first half. They were very active on defense, and you know, they led 23-16 at the under 8. That's when the Marquette run comes. Marquette goes on a 17-1 run, but Dayton bounces back and they get the lead. They retake the lead 39-34 heading into halftime. A 15-4 run to close out the half to grab a 5-point lead at the break. You know, as I said, Keontae Jones was in foul trouble. Montgomery picked up 2 fouls. Jacob Connor picked up 2 fouls in the first half. Dayton had 16 first half turnovers, 18 Marquette points off of those turnovers. Now, Marquette didn't do much of a better job taking care of the basketball. They had 12 first half turnovers, and they ended up with 20 for the game. Dayton scored 18 points off those turnovers. Marquette scored 24 points off Dayton's 25 turnovers. So Dayton a little bit better of the job, all things considered, taking care of the ball in the second half than the first half. Second half gets going. Montgomery gets shaken up early on with, you know, kind of lands on his back funny. He wasn't really quite the same after that happened. He wasn't out of the game very long, but he wasn't quite the same after that happened. And then obviously the big moment in the second half was Javon Bennett leaving with a leg injury because of cramping. And they made mention on the broadcast about this. The Dayton sports information director texted the sideline reporter for True TV last night, just said cramping period everywhere period. So Bennett was dealing with a lot of cramping. He came back into the game, you know, around the 14 minute mark. He played one possession, threw the ball away, got taken out immediately. And from there, Dayton was just holding on to the ledge and trying not to fall off. Marquette rather goes on a 7-0 run in a minute 44 to cut the lead back to 5. Dayton entered the bonus. Marquette picked up their 6th foul at 9:32 and of left in the game. And Dayton took 2 free throws for the rest of the half. You know, when I've loved how Dayton has forced the issue and gotten to the line this year. They haven't been a great free throw shooting team. They haven't been awful, but they haven't been a great free throw shooting team. But I like how they've pushed the envelope there to get a lot of attempts at the free throw line. And for whatever reason, you know, and I know Marquette kind of dove back into the zone and Dayton kind of went into the stall ball offense with 8 minutes to go, which was never going to work. I just would have liked to have seen them try and get more aggressive and get a couple more opportunities at the line and kind of ice the game the way that way. Cause if you're not going to get easy looks through your offense, which Dayton wasn't, you know, getting to the free throw line is a good way to mitigate that and to see, you know, to prevent that 7-0 run, 9-0 run, or whatever it may be. You know, I just would have liked to have seen Dayton keep getting to the free throw line. Down the stretch here, Bennett comes back into the game, makes a huge 3. Durkak, who I love watching. I really do. He does a lot of great things on the basketball court. He'll also do some of the dumbest things you've ever seen on the basketball court. And, you know, it's the give and take. And this play in itself kind of, you know, summarized it up. Durkak, so there's a loose ball on the floor. Durkak dives for the ball, gets it, and instead of, you know, calling timeout or just holding on to it until a Marquette player forced a tie-up, which I do not remember who held the possession arrow at the time, he kind of just, like, shoveled it out right to a Marquette player, kicks it out for a wide-open 3. They hit another 3, cut it to 2, timeout Dayton. You know, Keontae Jones gets a huge steal and layup, his first big play of the game with 53 seconds to go. Marquette scores as well to make it 30 seconds left. Dayton turns the ball over again for their 24th turnover of the night. And then Marquette doesn't get a shot up for the last possession, which, you know, a lot of people are going to kill Shaka Smart for this. They overpassed. And, you know, part of that might have been the defense that Dayton was playing. And, you know, you can sit back and be like, well, how do you not get a shot up? But I thought Dayton's defense on the final possession really, really took care of and really discombobulated Marquette. And then, you know, you go to overtime. Keontae Jones hits the three to start. Jacob Connor hits a big three. Dayton gives up an offensive rebound and a three for Marquette, 70 to cut it to three, 74-71 with a minute 30 to go. And from there, you know, that Marquette has the ball. Jones makes the block. Bennett makes the two big free throws. So when I watch these games, when I know I'm going to do a pod, I always just kind of jot down notes. Just random little things, you know, Montgomery two threes early, very active on defense tonight, you know, tie game, turnovers killing us, 10-0 run, yada, yada, yada. My last note comes from my wonderful girlfriend, Sam. And she kind of summed it up. She's watched maybe three Dayton basketball games in her life, last night being the third. And she says, and I quote, "I don't think Dayton's offense moved. They just stood there and stared at each other." And yeah, that pretty much summed it up. So there you go, Sam on hoops there. And she was right for those last 7 minutes. But you know what? Dayton, they ultimately, they find a way to grind it out. And that's what you want to see from this team. A lot of people probably thought as soon as that game was going overtime that Dayton had no shot of winning that basketball game. That didn't really feel that way. I still felt like Dayton could win the game, but they God, it was just a great win, and I don't know how good this win is going to end up being. Marquette is, I don't know, they're probably a middle-of-the-road team in the Big East at best. They've got a really tough stretch coming up here in their next several games, so don't worry about metric stuff and all that. We'll get into that later. You still have plenty of opportunities to pick up good, you know, metric wins. This is a team win that Dayton needed to have. And I talk about this with Mo. If you go on the road and lose to UC and Marquette, that puts so much pressure on the Georgetown neutral site game on Thanksgiving night. You really, really, really needed to have one of those two games. They didn't get the UC one. And we know, we lamented how bad they shot the ball. But through five games, that looks more like an outlier than the norm. And maybe not from in the three-point department. I'm still not sold on this team as a three-point shooting team. DeShane Montgomery has started shooting the ball better. Keontae Jones has made a couple threes. Jacob Connor made a couple big threes. If Jacob Connor can just give us that, you know, because he doesn't give you a whole lot else. And you know what? I've been hard on him. I'm not going to be hard on him on this pod. He was only one of two Dayton players last night that didn't turn the ball over. Him and Javon Bennett did not turn the ball over last night, despite the fact that Dayton turned it over 24 times as a team. So, yeah, all in all, just a gritty, gutty, you know, big win for the Dayton Flyers last night. And they just found a way. And that's what you want to see from this Dayton team in November, is just try and figure out ways to win. And they did that last night, and especially on the road in a hostile environment. Now, you know, was the arena full? Probably not. Were there a good amount of Dayton fans there? Sure. My dad made the trip. But you know what? It's a win that Dayton needed to have to build some confidence moving forward. Now, you gotta buy game on Saturday against North Carolina Central. Then you play Georgetown and whoever in the ESPN Events Invitational or whatever it's called. You can't go out and lay an egg and let North Carolina Central hang around and not be impressive. You need to build on this. You need to build on a win like this one. If you build on that win, you go out, you play well on Saturday. That you got a lot of time before you play again. You can rest your guys. And it really looks like Dayton is going – 8 deep, really. Maybe 9 if they need to with foul trouble. But it's 8 deep. And if you look at the minutes played last night for Dayton, you know, Letong played 34 minutes. DeShane Montgomery played 42 minutes. Javon Bennett, who missed a lot of the second half, played 33 minutes. Jacob Connor played 22 minutes. Simon and Malcolm Thomas each played 11, and Bryce Hurd played 9. You know, it's probably going to be those 9 guys, and it's more likely going to be 8 of those guys. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with everything and see how Dayton builds, you know, moving forward. So this is the first pod I've really had since the beginning of the year. Work got crazy last week, hectic, especially with Dayton and UC playing. Didn't get a chance. Wanted to find a window to get Mo Egger on the show as well. That was part of the reason I didn't have an episode last week. So we did finally get Mo tracked down on his day off, no less. But I'll talk about the UC Dayton game real quickly. I went to the game with my brother since, you know, it was in town, all that. Good amount of Dayton fans there, obviously. It was a weird game because both teams, like UC probably felt they should have won that game by 20. And Dayton probably felt like, oh, we should have won that game. It was a weird, like, vibe. And, you know, I was talking to UC people after the game about it. And, you know, that was kind of the gist that I got from them, is like, man, it feels like we should have won that game by like 20, 24 points. I was like, I feel like Dayton should have won that game. You know, if they capitalize on some of those turnovers, now granted, a lot of it was just UC being careless with the ball. It wasn't necessarily Dayton's defense forcing turnovers. And Marquette was kind of that way last night too. Just now, you know, Dayton's played some part in that, but they aren't getting those like run out easy layups a lot. You know, they're not scoring a ton off of those forced turnovers. So it'll be interesting to see what happens within, you know, how Dayton handles all of that. But a tough loss, but I think UC is a pretty decent team. I think they're going to finish in the top half of the Big 12. They're not going to win the Big 12 by any means. You know, they need to be a tournament team this year or else it's going to get late early for Wes Miller there. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at with this Dayton team. If you can pick up, you know, if you can win one of these games in Orlando and then pick up one of those wins against Florida, you know, beat Florida State at home, you know, maybe beat Virginia and Charlotte, Dayton's going to put themselves in a pretty good position going into A-10 play to be in the conversation for a tournament bid. And me and Mo kind of discussed that as well during the interview. So, you know, that's all for me. Just wanted to talk about the win last night. Wanted to talk, you know, a little bit about the Dayton UC games since I didn't get a chance to touch on it last week. But let's not wait any longer. Let's get right into it. Our interview with former University of Dayton graduate Mo Egger. Okay, we now welcome on a very, very, very special guest. He's a University of Dayton graduate. He's the host of the Mo Egger Radio Show on ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. He is the pre- and post-game show host for the Cincinnati Bearcat football and basketball team. He loves a good bat flip, and he hates it when you bunt. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the program, Mo Egger. Hi, Mo.
Drewby, how we doing?
We're doing great. After a Dayton victory over Marquette, where they get the home-and-home sweep against the Marquette Golden Eagles, we're doing pretty great.
It's a good morning to be a Dayton Flyer, isn't it, Drew?
It is. You know, we've had a lot of mornings where it isn't. And it was very close to being one of those mornings last night after Dayton tried to give that one away. But they didn't. They win in overtime, 77-71. Let's just start there. You watched the second half of the game last night. What'd you see? What'd you like? What'd you not like? And kind of what were your overall thoughts on the contest?
I like the fact that they did everything they could to not win the game and still won the game on the road. I'm not sure how great Marquette is. You know, I watched them against Indiana and they got bludgeoned by the Hoosiers. But you turn it over 25 times. It's early in the season. You're still trying to figure out who can do what. You kind of, I don't want to say choke it away at the end of regulation, but every time it felt like they had a chance to grab a hold of the game, they didn't. And we've seen so many times just in the sport of college basketball, where the road team that does that, then the home team takes over the last 5 minutes. They get out rebounded. They missed 8 free throws last night and still figure out a way to get a road win against the team in the Big East. That's a really, really good November. We'll see in March how good that win proves to be. But in November, it felt really good. So good for the Flyers for pulling that off last night.
Yeah, who'd have thought that you saw the two teams that you want to see win most in college basketball turn the ball over 49 times in 8 days and go 2-0?
Yeah, college basketball in November is sloppy. That's my big takeaway. I mean, college basketball in November can be really, really, really sloppy. And like, not every game, not every team. But that, to me, there's such a larger conversation in the sport happening right now. And I'll tell you, like, I love this era that we're in. I love free agency in college basketball. It makes the offseason actually matter. The on-court product, I think by the time we get to the heart of the season, can still be really good. I love the fact that the guys are getting paid. But I do understand the conversation in the sport about how do we, just as coaches, how do programs do a better job of hitting the ground running? Because fans want, you know, games like this, right? Like a non-league game. Dayton on the road against Marquette, home and home. We want these, but we also want a better product. We don't get a great product at times in November. And so how do we use the preseason to allow these teams, which so many of them are collections of dudes from everywhere else, how do we use the preseason to make the product better and have coaches put on the floor a product that is more representative of what their team is going to be by the time we – you know, would get to February. I think it's a good question, but yeah, man, UC did it last week, threw the ball all over the joint. I didn't think Dayton would outdo them. They did, needed 5 more minutes, but to go there and turn the ball over the way they did and get a win is not unimpressive.
Yeah. And I'm with you when it comes to Marquette. I don't really know how, you know, quote unquote, impressive that win is going to be when it's all said and done. But in the moment there, you're playing in a big arena. The crowd was at least 80% full there. A lot of Dayton fans, as there usually is. But, you know, just to go out and get a win like that is a huge, huge moment for the Flyers. Do you, like, when you watch them, when you see what's going on with the Dayton Flyers, like, do you have a good feeling about where they're heading? Do you think they'll be a better team in March and put themselves in a position to maybe go to the tournament? Or are there still things you need to see where that, you know, you're like, I need to see a little bit more before I start putting my flag there?
Yeah, I think that's where I am. I think that's where most of us are, right? And I think that's where most college basketball fans are with their team. Like, you form an opinion before the season and, you know, let's face it, most of us use preseason polls as a little bit of a guide. So Dayton was picked to finish third in the A-10. And I think most of us went, that sounds about right. I don't know that 4 or 5 games in, and I'm sure there are exceptions, but I don't know that 4 or 5 games in that there's a real reason to change how you felt about this team coming into the season. They certainly look flawed. They certainly look like they have their issues. But to me, it's kind of the bounce back. Like, it's not like the Marquette game was the next day after playing the Bearcats, but it didn't linger. You know, that loss at UC, which I think a lot of Dayton fans felt like was a winnable game, and for much of the night it certainly was. There was a good bounce back to it. I think if you felt like UD was going to be a bubble team, which is kind of where I am, right? Like, we're going to be looking at bracketology all February long. And last 4 in, first 4 out, last 4 buys, you know, that sort of thing. I think that's basically where they're going to reside all season long. I think they're going to challenge for an A-10 regular season title. I can understand why nobody really picked them to win it. I think most of us feel like that's kind of where they're going to be. The first 5 games hasn't given me any reason to think less. And the first 5 games haven't given me any reason to think that they're going to be better. But I'll say this, like, you could say, and this is more of a UD exclusive thing. You could say, well, I don't know how good Marquette's going to be. I've been following Dayton basketball. Drew, my freshman year started 30 years ago this fall. 30 years ago. And if there's been one constant, it's been the Dayton Flyers going on the road and losing to like Fordham, like a five-win right. Fordham team. Or they go and they play LaSalle at Tom Gola Arena, and LaSalle's not very good, hasn't been very good since Lionel Simmons, and a talented Flyers team takes a loss at LaSalle. Like, that has been, whether it's been Oliver Purnell, Brian Gregory, even to a lesser degree, Archie Miller, unfortunately, certainly Anthony Grant, no matter who the coach has been, that's been like part of the program's brand, with the exception of 2020. They lose these mystifying games in league play. I'm not talking about when they lose to the better teams in the league. I'm talking about when they, you know, when they yeah. go and play a bad Duquesne team in Pittsburgh. So what I would say is, if you're a UD basketball fan, you take no road win for granted, whether it's against a Big East team, an A-10 team, whether it's in mid-February or mid-November. So throw out the, you know, not sure how good Marquette is. I'm not sure how good Marquette is. I'm guessing not an NCAA, excuse me, not an NCAA tournament team. But if there's one thing Dayton fans have come to understand, it's how hard it is for this program to get road wins. They got one in Milwaukee last night.
Yeah, and it's a big one. It builds a lot of confidence. You know, they have some opportunities left. They play Georgetown on Thanksgiving night, so that's your next, you know, big opportunity for Dayton. They have a game on Saturday at home before that game against Georgetown down in Orlando on Thanksgiving night. So that gives them, you know, it puts them in position to continue to build the resume. I think if you'd have lost,
by the way, that Georgetown team, by the way, has two wins against high major competition. I don't know how good they're going to be once you know, Big East play gets here, and you know, old college basketball fans like me will do what old college football fans do whenever the Miami Hurricanes are any decent. You know, it's like, oh, the U is back. We'll do that with Georgetown, but they look pretty good. I watched them against Maryland, and that was a true road game. They won that game by 10, 12 points. That looks like a really challenging game. That could end up being a nice neutral site win to hang your hat on, you know, by the end of the season.
Yeah.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I agree with that. And that's kind of why I think winning last night was so important, because now you don't have so much pressure riding on this Georgetown game. Because if you don't beat UC, you don't beat Marquette, then you're looking at this, you know, Thanksgiving Orlando ESPN events invitational two-game stretch. Like, we really need to win one of these, and we probably need to win the first one to give us a chance to win that second one. So now I think some of that pressure has been alleviated because you beat Marquette last night. So, you know, kind of sticking with the game last night, what were some performance, like, is there any Dayton player you'd like to talk about? Who stood out to you, good or bad? Who's someone on the Flyer team that has impressed Mo Egger this year?
Well, I thought, I mean, DeShane Montgomery last night, you know, I mean, he was, I thought, the best player on the floor. And he played 41, 42 minutes. I mean, I barely ever took him out. 8 of 11 from the field. I thought he was terrific last night. I also thought Jacob Connor gave him some good minutes.
Yes.
For what it's worth. You know, he made a couple of threes. I don't recall him turning the ball over in his 18 to 20 minutes. My screen is frozen, Drew, so I don't have the box score in front of me. But on a night where they had no turnovers, you look at the guys who were not fast and loose with the basketball, he might have been the only guy. And so he stood out to me. Javon Bennett, having watched him up close against Cincinnati, you know, it was the second straight year where he struggled against the Bearcats. I also think he was one of the few Flyers who didn't turn the ball over last night, didn't necessarily shoot it all that well. made his free throws, which, you know, was a little bit of an exception last night. But I thought DeShane was, for stretches of the game last night, really, really, really good. I also really like how they just collectively defended in overtime, because, you know, again, like when things went down the way they did at the end of regulation, I don't think there's anybody who thought they were going to win the game. And they did, I think, in large part because of how they defended. Marquette got, I think, one field goal in those last 5 minutes. I thought the collective defensive effort, which slipped a little bit at times against Cincinnati, you know, the Bearcats turned the ball over a ton. I'm not sure any of those were ever forced. When UC stopped turning it over, Dayton had no defensive answer. They did in overtime last night.
Yeah, and you know, your feelings were right. Javon Bennett and Jay Connor each did not turn the ball over at all. Zero turnovers between the two of them. So that, you know, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, and Montgomery did look like the best player on the floor. I do want to shout out Keontae Jones, who made one of the best defensive plays I've ever seen anyone in a Dayton uniform make in a very, very important stretch of the game, where in overtime at 74-71, Marquette grabs an offensive rebound and Jones kind of comes from about the Big East logo in the middle of the lane to get the shot blocked, not only to block it, but to block it before it hit the backboard or the rim and to not get a goaltending call. Like that was, you know, and you go there, they foul Bennett, and then Dayton kind of ices it from there. Keontae Jones, he was quiet for, you know, 40 minutes. And then he makes the first three in overtime, has two blocks and a steal in the overtime period. So the Madison, Wisconsin native, you know, really took the Flyers home on the defensive end.
Yeah. You know, they defended the 3-point line well. They forced some turnovers. Marquette had 20 last night, right? Not like they were great with the basketball either. And I thought Dayton had something to do with that. Again, I thought the collective defensive performance in the last 5 minutes was really, really good. Also, just as, and this has nothing to do with the game itself or nothing to do with Dayton basketball itself, NBA arena, NBA announcers on an arm of TNT. Like, that felt big time last night.
Yeah.
That wasn't ESPN Plus. And so I think the atmosphere in the game presentation made that victory feel like it was bigger and better than it might have actually been.
I agree with that. I flipped it on and I was like, all right, True TV. That's interesting. Flipped it on. I saw Brian Anderson and Greg Anthony. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Like, this is a bit of a breath of fresh air here. So that was pretty exciting. So yeah, it did feel bigger, and you know, the picture quality was great. You could tell that we were working with, you know, tremendous high quality equipment as opposed to, you know, the ESPN Plus cameras that you get every once in a while. You know, as a Dayton basketball fan, you just kind of get used to that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, that was exactly my thought, right? Like, first of all, I thought it was on TNT, not True TV. So I turned on TNT and there was a hockey game on. So I was really confused. But that felt big time. And game presentation for Dayton basketball often doesn't feel big time.
No, it does not. All right. Let's go back in time. Let's go back a week. You got to watch this team up close and personal from press row, or from the scores table, rather, at the University of Cincinnati. You know, we'll dive into what that relationship between Dayton and Cincinnati and having to juggle that is like, because, you know, obviously you and I have talked about it, but a lot of people are probably curious as, you know, like, oh, well, Mo's a Dayton guy, but he does all this stuff for UC. Kind of explain your role there and, you know, kind of how you juggle the two.
Well, I started working at the radio station while I was at the University of Dayton, right? And so I grew up a huge UC basketball fan. I grew up a huge UC basketball fan because I wanted to spite my dad, who was a big UK fan, and Kentucky hired Rick Pitino, and I was a big Knicks fan, and Pitino was the Knicks head coach. So when Kentucky hired Pitino, I was like, man, screw that. And so Kentucky played Cincinnati when I was in the eighth grade, and I fell in love with Bearcat basketball that night, right? Like, they had Bob Huggins was in his second season. Rick Pitino was in his second season. Neither program, both programs were sort of coming out of real dark periods, probation. But I remember the game that night and thinking, you know, like, Dad, I'm not rooting for Kentucky. I'm like, we like the Reds. We like the Bengals. I'm going to root for Cincinnati basketball. And the game was awesome. Kentucky won the game 95-91. And that night, I fell in love with UC basketball. And the next year, they went to the Final Four. So I'm often asked, why didn't you just go to UC? And the answer is, one, I wanted to go away-ish. Like, had I gone to UC, I'd have lived at home, and that wasn't going to work for me. Now, nobody explained to me that, like, college costs money. That would have been nice for someone to kind of outline for me. But, like, Dayton, hour away, cool. And they had a campus radio station, and you did not need experience to be on it. Because all I wanted to do was be in radio. All I wanted to do, and this is the mid-90s when radio was, you know, cool. So I also looked at Western Kentucky. But Western Kentucky, they're like, well, you can be on the air, but you have to take classes first. And I'm like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life. Like, the idea is to get behind the microphone and gain experience. So Dayton allowed you to do that. So that's why I went there. I didn't really care much about much of anything else. You know, the social part was ended up being awesome, but I didn't care about that. The other academics really didn't matter to me. I didn't even really know the school was a Catholic school until orientation. Like, I just, they had a campus radio station and it was an hour away and it wasn't in the middle of nowhere. So that's why I went. So the Flyers, my 4 years were not very good. My freshman year was the first year in the Atlantic 10. And the only thing they really did over those 4 years was they beat Xavier every year. And I stormed the floor my sophomore year and I stepped on Skip Prosser's foot accidentally. Other than that, like, they made the NIT my junior year. They had a player by the name of Ryan Perryman, who is my favorite all-time Dayton Flyer, just a rebounding machine. I think he left the school as Dayton's all-time leading rebounder and may still be, but he was awesome. And I also had a geology class with him, and he probably slept in it more than I did, which was an accomplishment. So loved Ryan Perryman. So I was, you know, but in part because the Flyers were just not very good, and in part because I became so hooked on UC basketball. When I went to UD, I didn't really shake the whole UC thing. And those 4 years, my freshman year at UD, UC made the Elite Eight, played in Lexington. My sophomore year, UC was preseason number one in the country. My junior year, UC ended up being a 2 seed in the tournament. And then my senior year at UD, the Bearcats actually played the Flyers in Cleveland. Cincinnati beat Duke that year. And so I never stopped being a Bearcat fan. And I love the Flyers and I love going to games. And when I left and they made the tournament in 2000 and then have been pretty relevant since, it's been awesome. But during my 4 years at UD, I just couldn't stop being a Bearcat fan. I couldn't stop. And it didn't help that, like, all my high school friends went to Kentucky. And during those 4 years, Kentucky won 2 national championships. And so I couldn't come at them with the Dayton Flyers finishing like 7th in the A-10. Right. I had to come at them with, like, well, the Bearcats aren't that good, but they're at least in the conversation. So anyway, I started working at the radio station. I was an intern after my sophomore year, and then they hired me. And so I was working part-time, and then I started working full-time. And my senior year, I was doing a daily commute between Dayton's campus and the radio station in Mount Adams, because they like got hired full-time to work on the morning show. And that was as unfun as you might imagine, but at least I had a job. And I had been working at the radio station, and everybody knew I was a huge UC fan. And somebody came up to me one day and said, do you want to engineer the UC basketball games? And I didn't know what that meant, but I said, yes. And then I was like, had to like do some investigative work. Like, what does that mean? It's like, well, you sit courtside, you go to the game for free, and you plug in all the equipment and just sit there. It's like, yeah, I think I could do that. And so that's how it started. That was in 2001. Kenyon Martin's senior year was the year before. And so it was like, man, I get a chance to be a part of the broadcast crew for this program that I just adored and, you know, loved so much in high school and college. And so I've, you know, expanded my role since and get to do some on-air stuff, but it's a part of the job that I probably enjoy the most, being at the games. And so when it comes to UC versus Dayton, I can use the fact that I work on the Bearcat broadcast as a cop-out. And, yeah, you know, I get a chance to call like 2-3 games a year because Dan Hoard, the voice of the team, calls Bengals games, and there's often Bengals conflicts, so there might be a UC football conflict. And so since 2012, I've probably gotten a call, 40 or 50 games. There was a long stretch where I traveled with the team to every road game. I don't do that anymore because, you know, starting to do the daily talk show in the late 2000s kind of got in the way of that. But I've always been able to at least like hide behind the fact that, like, well, I do work on the broadcast. And so I prioritize the Bearcats first, but it really has to do with the fact that UD just wasn't very good during my 4 years there. And the Bearcats were, you know, pretty awesome during those 4 years. So the juggling, like, I hate that they play. I hate it, but because I don't like rooting against the University of Dayton in anything. But I really, the first time they played, it was in Cleveland, my senior year, and I went to the game with a bunch of Bearcat fans. It was an awful game. UC won 51-50. And I remember, like, being at the Gund Arena, which is what they called it at the time. And it wasn't fun. Like, it was miserable. It's like, I like both these. Like, this must be what it's like to watch your kids play against each other. I didn't like it. They've played sporadically here and there over the years. It was actually 1 year where they played twice. Andy Kennedy's year at UC, where UD beat him at Cincinnati, and then they played in Vegas at a high school, and UC won that one. The games are frankly unpleasant for me because it's a school that I love and it's a program that I love. And I don't like watching one lose to the other. And I don't, you know, there are UC fans who have decided they hate UD, and there are Dayton fans who have decided they hate UC. And I hate listening to them, those folks who support something that I love, just shit on something else that I love. So, right. I don't like it. But now, if I ever got my dream, which would be to watch, you know, those two programs play deep in the tournament, well, that would be cool as hell. But people don't believe me. Like, I am genuinely, like, I have this pit in my stomach when that game is happening. I don't like it. I really, they played 2 years ago, the first of the two games at the Heritage Bank Center, and Dan lost his voice. And I had to call the second half, and it was awful. I was so woefully unprepared, and that made it worse. Like, I didn't like that at all. I didn't like calling a Dayton loss, which Dayton won the game. Daron Holmes was really good that night. I don't like it, and so it's a tough juggling act. I know it sounds weird. I really don't like when the two teams played against each other, because I feel like I've sold out my alma mater. But, you know, you go where your heart takes you. And my heart took me when I was 13 years old to UC basketball, and it hasn't left. It's the longest standing relationship I have.
Well, there you go. And, you know, that's, it's very interesting. I always was, when I first started working at the radio station about 2 years ago, and I found out that you were a Dayton guy, I was like, whoa, that's interesting. Cause that was going into the first year that they were going to play. And I remember that broadcast where you had to fill in for Dan Hoard
because I ran that broadcast.
And I remember coming on, connecting with you guys there at Heritage Bank. I was not supposed to do that broadcast. An unnamed colleague incorrectly scheduled me that evening. And I connected with the broadcast, and the first thing I said to Dan Hoard, Terry Nelson, and you was, guys, I'm going to keep this professional, but I'm rooting for the other team. And and lo and behold, Daron Holmes and Kobe Brea painted the town red that night, and they played really well. But that I just found that, you know, to be very, very interesting, and how much you do, and I know how much you dread, you know, those two teams playing, because we talked about it in the lead up to this year's game. So appreciate you for, you know, opening up about that. We're right at about the half hour mark here. So
I had been, I had been out of school for like a year, and they played, I think, the 2000-2001 season at UD Arena. And that was literally the first time I had been. I graduated in 99, May of 99. And that game, I think it was November. I think it was November or December of 2000. It was the first time I had been back at UD Arena and on campus. And I remember I went to that game with my dad. And I remember just like, this sucks. This, I don't like this. Like, I shit you not, man. Like, I really physically feel weird when the two play. I don't like it. But UC basketball, man, when I was, you know, this is a Dayton podcast. When I was in high school and went through a lot of like sort of crappy stuff in my life, like I could look forward to watching UC play twice a week, and they were on TV every night. And it's just not something I've been able to let go of, as weird as it sounds. But if they cancel the game next year, I'd be fine with that. I was trying to explain this to my wife before the game last week, because she's like, you know, well, you're going to win either way. And I go, I'm going to lose either way. Like, I don't,
yeah. So like, depends on how you view that.
I don't like looking at Dayton people and saying I'm rooting against the school that I have a diploma from. Don't like it. But I do it anyway.
But you do it. You got to do it. All right, Mo, we'll finish this up here. Just kind of one final, like, quick hitter. If you had to put together your favorite Dayton starting five, so not necessarily, like, it doesn't need to be the best starting five, but your favorite Dayton starting five, who would you put on that starting five?
Jalen Crutcher and Obi Toppin. Ryan Perryman, my guy Josh Pastorino, I'm trying to think of who I want for the fifth. I've loved some relatively obscure, not great Dayton players. I'm a big Edwin Young guy.
Edwin Young, yeah.
Like Edwin Young. I'm going to go Edwin. These are players I just like, or, you know, no one's going to say Josh Pastorino is awesome, but right. I like Josh. I like Ryan.
Me too. Great guy.
Edwin. Great guy. You know what? I'll swap out Josh for Keith Wallace-Kowski.
Okay. There you go. That'll make Keith happy. Alum of this show.
And awesome dude, terrific player. Played against UC. I remember that day hating him. Keith Wallace-Kowski was awesome. All right, I'll go Edwin, Jalen, Obi, Ryan, and Keith. And again, Keith. That's not like putting together the best five. That's right. Putting together
it's your favorite starting five. Doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
We're not rolling the ball out and having them go get a bucket. If we were, it'd just be Jalen Crutcher and Obi Toppin pick and roll.
And then, like, Brian Roberts would be my sixth man.
Sixth man, yep.
Love Brian.
Ahead of his time. Like, if he
very
comes,
much so ahead of his time.
If he comes, like, 7 years later,
yeah,
he is, like, I think he goes on to have a very, very long, and he still had a, you know, relatively successful pro career, but man, he just, you want to talk about a player who was ahead of his time. Brian Roberts was that guy.
Brian Roberts was awesome. See, now I'm thinking like Brooks Hall. Brooks Hall was terrific. Brooks Hall, like, as a freshman, we all thought, like, boy, by the time that dude's a senior, he's going to be the player of the year in the A-10. That didn't really materialize. David West had something to do with that, but Brooks Hall was awesome. And a guy who, like, you talk about being ahead of his time, took a ton of threes per game in an era where there weren't a whole lot of guys shooting, you know, on a per game average, seven or eight guys. All right. I'm going to go. All right. Can Brooks and Brian be my six and seven man?
Yeah. Your combo. Okay. You're first off the bench. We'll roll with that.
And my coach is going to be Oliver Purnell. Can I tell you why? So
go ahead.
This goes back to me being a student. So I'm at Flyer Radio. right? Flyer Radio, which at the time was 99.5. And my sophomore year, I got to do a sports show, right? Because it was a music station and we had to play all this really awful college alternative rock, just miserable. But they let me do a sports show. And my two favorite things that ever happened. Number one, I called St. Joe's coach Phil Martelli during that time. This what it might have been later on. And we were trying to get him on because they were playing Dayton, and we called the St. Joe's basketball office and Phil Martelli answered the phone. And we're like, "Hey, is Phil Martelli there?" He's like, "Speaking." Like, "You know, my name's Mo. I do a radio show in Dayton. Can you come on?" He's like, "Sure." It was awesome.
Wow.
So anyway, I had this Marantz tape recorder because we had cassette tapes back then. And I had reached out to the Dayton basketball office like, "Hey, I student radio. Can I conduct an interview with Oliver Purnell?" And they said, "Yeah, come on down to the office to do it." And so I go, and I never sat down and interviewed somebody face to face before. And so I have my tape recorder and I sit it on the table and we do the interview. And as the interview ends, I look down, I didn't hit record. So I very sheepishly, as like a 19-year-old kid, I look at Oliver Purnell, a Division I basketball coach. And I go, "Mr. Purnell, I didn't hit record." And he could not have been more gracious. I will tell you, the number of coaches who would have said, "Yes, let's redo the entire interview in its entirety," is 0%. Okay.
Yeah.
And he could not have been cooler about it. Like he was so nice. And so because of that, whether it's at Clemson or DePaul, and like, I get it, by the time he left, folks were ready. I've always thought of how cool he was to me as a student. He had no reason to be, he had no reason to do the interview. I cannot imagine if that tape is anywhere, how bad it is. But I looked at him after 10 minutes and I'm like, "We didn't get any of that." And he just, he didn't bat an eye. He's like, "No problem at all, man." Just a lesson in how to treat people, Oliver Purnell. So he's my coach.
All right. Well, there you go, Mo. We appreciate you coming on, talking out loud. I know we've been angling to get this done for a while, so I'm glad we could. You're welcome back anytime, and enjoy the rest of your day off from ESPN 1530.
It's how much I think about you that I'm doing your podcast when I literally have nothing else to do. It's my day off. I could be doing anything, and instead I chose to spend part of it with
that's,
you.
That's because we're friends and not colleagues. You know, you're a big proponent of friends or friend or colleague. I like to think we're friends, not colleagues.
There are friends, there are colleagues, there are associates and work friends. You've graduated from associate. I'll put you in the work friend category for now.
Fair. We'll see. All right. Fair. I'll take that. A lot of time to grow. It's early.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Talking Out Loud. I want to thank Mo Egger once again for joining the show. Next week, we're going to hope to get another guest on before Thanksgiving, try and get an episode out before the Thanksgiving game. So until then, we have two rules on this show. They are wear red and they are be loud. We'll catch you next time on Talking Out Loud.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.